Time to get the weekly view from the north, which seems to be getting later and later. Keep up if you dare. NBC Sports Northwest, Rip City Radio, podcasting. Soon to be starring with Bree Amaranthus and Serena Winters, and I guess it's the remake of The Bridges of Multnomah County. Follow along on Twitter, the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are you?
What is up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good. No complaints, but you got to live out a bucket list event that actually the three of us in this studio all want. You got to do curling?
I did. You guys have always wanted to do that?
Oh, yeah, so bad.
Really?
I'm not kidding, right? Not even joking.
Well, wait till the video comes out. It's going to be pretty hilarious. I bit it my first time doing it.
Oh,
not only did I... Dude, my right hip, it's still tender.
The rare curling injury.
The ice is no joke, man. The ice is not forgiving at all. You know, if you fall on a wood floor or you fall on turf, there's some forgiveness there. You fall on ice, So, I get into the block, and then my right foot goes in the block, my left foot goes in the slippery piece, and you're supposed to push with your right foot, and you slide, and you have your right hand holding the stone, and your left hand is holding this weird contraption that slides along the ice, and you got to keep your left foot under you to keep your body up, right?
Yep.
So I pushed off, and I'm going good, and then all of a sudden, my upper body started spreading out forward, and my hands started going forward. And then my left leg went back, and so I became basically parallel to the ice, kind of, and then crack, boom.
Bam.
And it all happened without me knowing what was happening until I hit the ice, and my hip hurt instantly, and I was like, crap. But I played it off, and I finished the game like a trooper, like a baller, but it still hurts 3 days later.
All right, but I saw the injury report. They've got you listed as questionable for the next
match. I'll be good to go.
All right. So I saw you guys after the Super Bowl got to talk with Kenyon Barner, who, obviously with the Eagles, and every time we mention his name on our show, we always tag it, and he just scored again against USC. But seriously, what did he have to say about maybe bringing those lunatic fans a title, and maybe that it seemed like he's still a little regretful it didn't happen here?
Yeah, first of all, he got emotional after the game. It was, just the idea of winning a Super Bowl was very emotional for him, and he was very happy. And LaMichael James took a screenshot of him when the trophy went by, and Daryl Green had it. He went by to Kenyon, and Kenyon was crying. And LaMichael joked that he had Michael Jordan face, Michael Jordan crying face. But Kenyon said, "Yeah, man, it was just a great moment, obviously for the team and for the city." And he said, "Oh yeah, when he got back to town, it was just crazy still, and people were just rejoicing and reveling in the fact they won their first Super Bowl ever, the first title since 1960. Is that right?"
Yep.
1960. But I asked him, I said, "So, Kenyon, your senior year, you guys are ranked one or two in the nation, lost to Stanford." And he goes, "Why got to bring up old stuff?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm just, hold on a second." He goes, "You always want to bring up old stuff." I go, "No, I'm not trying to pick up old wounds. I just want to lead to a question. I just kind of said, does winning the Super Bowl make up for falling short of winning the national title?" And he's like, no, it does not. He goes, "In 2011, we lost that game to SC. 2012, we lost that game to Stanford." He's like, I'll always regret that because we wanted to bring a national title to Oregon, something that's never happened before, and we failed to do that, and this does not make up for it," which I thought was an interesting answer. I was not surprised he said that, but I did think it was interesting.
Yeah, it's hard to the kind of career he had to use the fail word. I mean, what they accomplished there. If memory serves correctly, though, isn't there the irony, the 2012 game? Wasn't that his teammate, Zach Ertz, made that touchdown in the back of the end zone?
Yes, I had forgotten about that, but he brought it up and said that he and Ertz every once in a while would talk about that game, and that he keeps reminding Ertz that he was out of bounds. That he was not in bounds, he did not catch it, it wasn't legal, and Ertz was like, "Last time I checked, it counted, and we won, so I don't know what you're talking about." So that's kind of funny that they still talk about that years later. Gosh, that was, dude, that was 5 years ago.
Is that ridiculous? 2012 season. It's just silly how time flies. Talking with Aaron Fentress of NBC Northwest. As for the Eagle coach, Doug Peterson, I mean, that call near the end of the half to shun a field goal to get the TD pass to his quarterback, the fourth down conversions. I mean, was that a case of a coach who just had a pair of brass ones, or was he just understanding that, look, at a certain point, field goals ain't going to be enough. We need touchdowns.
Well, that first choice to go for it was borderline psycho, I thought, at the time. Because they, what was the score at that time? They have the lead.
Yes, near the end of the half. They're up 7 points, I think.
Yeah, so normally you would just take the 10. And for me, it's like, if you're going to run that play, why don't you run it on third? But I guess I got closer on third anyway. So I think it was a situation, and Kenyon said they practiced it 3 times. And this is funny, because he said all the running backs were like, it's not going to work. This is not going to work. Well, because why do running backs think that inside the five? Give the running backs the ball, right? All the running backs like, this is not going to give it to the running back. So they didn't think it was going to work. They didn't think that dude would make the right throw. They kind of figured Foles would probably catch it, not that hard of a catch, but they thought that New England would be on to it and not fall for it. But for whatever reason, Peterson clearly was confident it would work, and you have to have supreme confidence in that situation. Otherwise, you're just rolling the dice and giving away 3 points. But wow, not only did it work, but Nick Foles was uncovered.
Yeah, he was
completely uncovered.
Lonely. Yeah, it was 15-12 at the time. They could have got up 6 going into the locker room. Instead, they're
up
12.
And then the other fourth and one at their own 47, I think. I thought that was clearly risky, because if you don't get it, New England is almost assured of at least a field goal, but then you would have had time to answer. So there's that part of it. But the thing about me with going for fourth down that far, going for it on fourth down that far away, is that converting it doesn't guarantee success on the drive. You still have a long way to go. But they didn't matter. They got that fourth and one, and then they just chunk, and boom, they were in the end zone. So it wasn't that much of a challenge at that point. But that was gutsy, and it paid off. They still gave New England time, but then you had finally Philadelphia was able to get to Brady after all game coming close. They finally got to him and got the chip back.
Yep. Michigan on Michigan crime, that Graham kid getting Brady.
Right.
It was awesome. So a thought about recruiting day. We know what a crapshoot it is. I mean, you look at UCLA the last 5 years. They've been 7th and 12th and 13th, and they don't even contend for the conference. But if you look at Oregon, 3 coaches in 14 months. So I guess, what did you make of the group that they, you know, were able to carve out under Mario Cristobal? That, you know, looks like consensus 15 or 16.
Yeah, all things considered, I thought they did a really good job. I mean, they were 5 at one point, but they lost a boatload of decommits. They got some back. They added some others. Obviously, getting that guard. I can't remember his name. Off the top of my head, what's his name? The guard, Puel?
Yeah.
Puel.
The kid from
Puel.
Utah.
What's his name?
Panay Sewell.
We got to go. Panay Sewell. Getting him late like that was a big get. That's a big time O line kid. That's one of the more highly touted O linemen they've gotten in years. And then the 2 receivers they got last week helped bolster the class. They got those guys to commit last week. They needed some receivers. So I think, had they not been flirting with 5, and I guess they were 1 on scout for a while. Scout doesn't exist anymore. Had they not been ever in the top 5, I think people would look at 15 and go, yes. But I think when you had that taste of being 1 on someone's recruiting service in your Oregon, and then to fall that far, it's probably still a little painful, but I think you have to look big picture. And I think the staff showed that, it's very disheartening to have a coach bail on you like that out of nowhere. I mean, that's hard. That's an impact on the program. So for them to maintain a top 15 class was a good sign that this staff is going to do well in the future. It was interesting to watch Taggart and what he did with Florida State. He jumped up, I think he finished 10th or 11th. At one point, there were 7 yesterday, then they fell down to 10 or 11. He went to a weird situation, too. I mean, I talked to him actually a few weeks ago, and he said Jimbo Fisher clearly knew he was leaving because they were doing no recruiting. Like,
oof.
The commits they had on the list, he's like, most of these guys said they hadn't heard from a Florida State coach in weeks or months.
Wow.
So he had to do a job salvaging that, but it showed the power of Florida State. And one of the reasons why he went there, dream school and the ability to recruit in that state, he finished with a good class. So I think both guys came out, Crystal Ball and Taggart, did pretty well, all things considered.
A couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress. Each week you hit us with your hypothetical about what needs to happen for Oregon to maybe get in the North picture this coming season. And, of course, in this league, you better be able to cover. Tyree Robinson, Arion Springs are gone. A lot of young guys kind of broke their maiden last year. So what are you thinking about what the secondary might look like for 2018?
Yeah, you know, you lost two seniors that – took their lumps, had ups and downs, but they had strong seasons last year. Arion Springs was at one point leading the conference in passes defended, even though he had one pick. So he was getting to a lot of balls.
Right.
I don't remember where he finished, but I'm sure it was top three. And Tyree kind of basically came around as a leader and a more consistent guy, had a nice season as well. So you lose those two. Ugo stays behind, but he's the only senior who's going to be in the mix. I mean, McGraw might be, but I doubt it. He hasn't been to this point. He plays a little bit, but not as a starter. So where does Amadi fit? I think he'll stay at safety with either Pickett or Breeze starting, and you're talking about a sophomore and a redshirt sophomore, and then you're looking at Graham, who had a nice first half of the year, the second half of the year, solid, but he didn't get. I don't think he had more than one interception in the second half. And then you got Diomedo Lenore, a sophomore as well. So you're looking at a sophomore in the secondary starting with a senior. It's probably what you're looking at. That's still youth. And this is a tough conference to have youth in the secondary. And now these are all talented guys, and they could do well or they could be middling. I think they have to do really well to contend because this conference abuses young defensive backs.
Now, final thought, the NBA. I think Blazer fans were hoping for something. I know you talked with Jason Quick on your radio show, who's probably as wired into the franchise as anybody.
Right.
From what he had to say or your read on this Vonley trade, I don't know. What's the state of this team for the rest of the year?
They traded Vonley for a guy who the Bulls have the rights to, but has never played for the Bulls. I think he's still over in Europe.
Yep.
He was drafted in 2007. He's 32. It was basically just to clear some cap space so they could fall under the tax threshold and save some money. So that was just a money dump, basically, just to save some cash. Nothing wrong with that. And they're loaded that power forward, and they don't believe Vonley clearly is going to be the guy moving forward who's going to be a key part of their franchise. I know fans wanted more, and I get that. I saw some people on Twitter freaking out. O'Shea should be fired. O'Shea doesn't know what he's doing. You have to have a trade partner. You have to have something they want. You also don't want to make a stupid trade. You don't want to just make a move to make a move, because then everyone's saying, well, now we're stuck with this guy. We got to make another move. You just put yourself in a bad situation. A legitimate complaint is that 2016, the crazy summer of 2016, where even I was offered a five-year, $25 million contract, and my basketball career ended in my freshman year in high school, but that's how much money was being thrown around to anybody. I mean, it's like if you average 9 points a game, you were getting $15 million.
It's unbelievable.
It didn't matter. And so they went out. I mean, they gave Harkless an extension, Myers Leonard an extension. They signed. They gave Crabbe an extension. They obviously traded in later, but and they gave Evan Turner a big deal. And none of these contracts are movable. So these teams are trying to dump salary to get under the cap. Portland can't play with them because everyone has at least 2 years remaining. And so, yes, you can blame them for that, but they rolled the dice because they had the cap space. It's a tough situation right now, but I think long term, I think next year at this time, it'll be easier because guys only have 1 year remaining. And I think Zach Collins, everyone I keep talking to about Zach Collins, says the reason why he's not included in any trade talk is because they believe he's going to be legit and that whoever they're getting back, unless they're a superstar, they're not going to be worth giving him up. So I think patience needs to be preached. They need to wait these contracts out, and then they can make some moves. I think Kevin Love, if LeBron leaves, I think Cleveland looks to dump Kevin Love. I think you have a chance there, maybe. But, yeah, I know fans are disappointed, but you just have to be patient.
Zach Collins, huh? And patience for Blazer fans?
Zach Collins. You know what? Since I've been hearing – yeah, exactly. That's always funny. But since I've been hearing more about Collins, I've been paying attention to him. He can shoot it.
Yep,
and
for a big guy.
Aggressive on defense. He's just too small. As he packs on pounds, he'll have more of an impact on both sides of the court. And he's athletic. Like, I've been paying more attention to just how he moves. Like, he has a spring to his step. I'm not saying he's going to be Kevin Garnett, but he kind of reminds me of that type of guy, a tall, angular, aggressive, physical guy who can shoot it. He has the potential to maybe be a poor man's Garnett. We'll see.
Yeah, and plus, he only played a year with the Zags. He's only 20.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. He's a pup.
Yep.
You know, he's a pup. So had he gone back to Gonzaga and started this year, he could have been a top five pick this upcoming draft. I mean, that's, you have to be a realist. I mean, seriously, he was 10th pick last year. So if had he played and been a starter and gone, you know, 17-9, he could have been a top five pick this year. So in their minds, they're thinking, why am I giving up a guy who would be top five in this draft for a veteran guy who may or may not be better than him in a couple of years? And I have to pay that veteran guy $25 million.
All right, folks, he's Aaron Fentress. If you're in the greater Portland area when he's working like 183 hours a week and you see him napping at a TriMet stop, just call his wife. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Always look forward to it, AF. Thanks for the time, man. Have a good one.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Take it easy.